Hello.
Well, good afternoon. Hey, we want to welcome you to our weekly phone call, our Monday call. This call is really designed for parents who have children who have learning difficulties, having trouble in school. We are Jill and David Stowell. We've owned Stowell Learning Center in Diamond Bar, California for 20, it's hard to believe it's been 25 years. We've had somewhere around 4,000 students come through. The unique thing about what we do is that we don't necessarily focus just on academic skills. And we have a call previously, we really talked about all the skills that are involved in someone being able to learn easily. But we really focus on fixing learning problems, not just accommodating. I think we're going to talk about that a little bit tonight. We're going to spend 45 minutes or so, maybe 30 to 45 minutes, just sharing some ideas about fixing learning problems. Now, this isn't a diagnosis session. We can't get into real, very, very deep things. But we can help people get a glimpse or an awareness of what's possible for students today. If this is your first call that you've been on with us, I really want to welcome you. And I have to caution you that if you really want to know what all this is about, it's going to take more than one call to do that. We can't possibly cover everything that we know in just one phone call. But hopefully this will, you know, give people some ideas, some directions, some answers that they might not be getting other places. Tonight, we're going to talk about three myths about learning problems. And really, that's because parents often spend a lot of time trying to make sense out of what they're experiencing. And a lot of times what they're experiencing is happening because of three myths that get in the way and tend to prolong the agony and slow down their progress. Did I introduce that well enough? What do you think, Jill? Does that cover it?
I think so, yeah.
Great. So since I'm the one who doesn't really know that much, I'll let you talk about the myths. So tell us, what is the first myth we're going to talk about tonight?
Okay, well, before I talk about the first myth, let me just give you a picture of kind of a typical situation. A student is not doing well in school. This could be an elementary or a, you know, junior high or high school student. Not doing well in school, parent goes and has a conference with the teacher and other people at the school maybe to find out what can be done. And a lot of times what is suggested is testing to see if the child qualifies for special help through the special education department at school. Now, sometimes kids do qualify, but we also talk to a lot of parents where they've gone through this testing process, and then they're told, you know what, he's working to his potential, he, you know, doesn't qualify for special ed services, there's not really a problem. He just kind of needs to work a little bit harder. So parents go away, they know that they've seen difficulties. I mean, they're sitting with their child every night working on homework, and they see that it's a struggle, but, you know, I guess there's nothing wrong, so they just try to, you know, really tough it out and work harder themselves, make their child work harder to try to make it successful.
You know, if a kid's not being successful, it would seem to me an awful lot of parents would take on guilt about that. Is that true?
They do. And they come away saying, okay, well, if there's, you know, if the school is saying there's nothing wrong with my child because they don't qualify for any help, then I must be doing something wrong as a parent, or my kid is doing something wrong, or both. And, you know, as the struggles go on and on, then the family dynamic just becomes more and more challenging. It doesn't really get better with all that effort and worry and energy. And the bottom line is that it isn't somebody's fault. And that really takes us to the first myth.
Okay, what is it?
The myth is that if you aren't diagnosed with as learning disabled, dyslexic, ADD, then you don't have a learning problem and nothing's wrong.
Huh, that's not true?
That is not true.
Tell me this. Why is it that a kid could go and get testing at school and the school says there's nothing wrong and you're saying, well, that's not true, there could be things wrong?
Well, what the schools are looking for is they're really looking for a discrepancy or a really big difference between how a child scores on an IQ test and how they score on achievement tests like reading, spelling, math tests.
So does this have anything to do with grades?
Well, sometimes, you know, they'll take a look and if they see that a child is struggling in school and they say, oh, well, you know, he's a couple of years behind, it seems like, you know, then they'll look at testing. But in reality, it doesn't really have to do, qualifying doesn't have a lot to do with the performance in class. The performance in class kind of makes people think, oh, we better get testing. But once they get testing, they're looking for this really big discrepancy between their intelligence and how they're scoring on achievement tests.
So is that, would that not tell us that there was something wrong with learning skills? Or might it?
Well, here's the problem. Sometimes kids are struggling in class. The teacher knows it, the parent knows it, but they do well enough on the testing, which is individual, one-on-one testing, no distractions. They do well enough that maybe they score in the low average or below average range, maybe even the low range. But if they're not showing a really severe discrepancy, they might not qualify.
So a really big number between those tests.
So even if their score is low, it might not be low enough.
Well, you know, it sounds a little bit... Are you picking on the schools here?
No, I really am not. I mean, the schools are trying to provide service for children that are truly considered learning disabled, which comes to about 5 to 9% of the children in... about 5 to 9% of the children in school. But what we know is that there's another 21 to 25% of kids that have struggles, that have underlying problems with their learning skills that never are going to qualify because they're not quite severe enough.
Well,
so what we look for when we're doing our testing is we're looking to see, okay, if this child is struggling in reading, well, what are the underlying skills like attention and memory and being able to process or think about the sounds in words? What are the skills, learning skills, that allow that child to be successful in reading? Because if there's a problem with those underlying skills, then we can do all kinds of reading activities, but it's not going to make enough of a difference.
So schools really are looking at more standardized tests and what the achievement is on them and the discrepancy. You're really trying to measure whether those skills are in place. Is that true?
Yes. So we're not so concerned with qualifying a student. If a parent says the child is struggling, well, moms typically know the child is struggling. And so we need to figure out what is the source of that struggle so that we can address it.
So what is it that schools do?
Well, the schools really are focusing on academic skills and curriculum. So they're teaching kids reading, writing, spelling, math, geography, things like that. But they're not really trained to deal with what we call learning skills. So you don't go to first grade and learn how to pay attention or learn how to have a good memory or learn how to listen better or process the sounds in words, or you go and you learn how to do subjects. And so really, you know, they're not trained or budgeted or staffed to fix learning skills. They're trained to teach subjects.
Hmm.
So it's a different a different thing. But those kids that are struggling to learn the subjects need some help developing the underlying skills that will make school easier.
So with myth number one, what you're saying is of those who qualify, there are a bunch who don't qualify, you still need help.
Right, exactly.
You know, it reminds me of just kind of a situation. I thought this up in my head, of course. But think about an elementary school basketball team taking on an NBA team. Now that's not hardly fair, is it?
Yeah, pretty ludicrous.
but think about if we decided to give every kid who was under 5 feet tall some special help. You know, because they're playing an NBA team. So we arbitrarily pick 5 feet. And, of course, most guys in the NBA are 6'5", 7 feet, somewhere in that range. So if you're below 5 feet, we're going to give you extra help. But what about the kid who's 5'3" or 5'4"? Well, he still needs help too, doesn't he?
Exactly. But because he's a little bit taller, maybe it doesn't seem like he needs it as much. And that's
okay.
Kind of what's happening to our kids. Because they perform a little bit better, it doesn't look like they don't have a serious enough problem to get that extra help. That's the problem. So we have a lot of kids that we say kind of fit in the gray area, and that is not a very comfortable place to be.
So really for parents, what we really want them to understand is that even if they've been tested and somebody says, well, there's nothing wrong or they don't qualify for special help, they're not crazy.
Right.
You know, and their kids are not like, you know, from Mars. This happens a lot, but it does not mean that there isn't something wrong or something that can be done.
Right, right.
All right.
Let me go on to myth number two.
Great.
And that is that most people believe that the best way to help people who have learning problems is to help them deal with it, to get around it or kind of tough it out or compensate for it.
Well, that doesn't sound so bad, does it?
Well, if you think about compensating for something, yeah, it gets you around it, but it's really not very comfortable. And but unfortunately, that is a really, really common belief. And even, you know, if you Google learning disabilities or dyslexia, you're going to find lots and lots of information, and it's almost all about accommodations.
Now tell me what you mean by accommodation.
Well, kind of adjusting the curriculum so that the child can do it, maybe giving them fewer spelling words because spelling is so difficult, or giving them more time on tests because their reading is so slow or inaccurate that they have to read over and over. They talk about assistive technology.
Ooh, that's like a fancy term.
Yeah, it is, like using keyboards instead of having to write when kids have trouble with, you know, actually physical writing skills. Maybe taking tests orally instead of written because, you know, if you have a reading problem, you might not be able to show what you know if you have to read the test.
Okay,
schools even have what's called 504 plans, which are actually accommodation plans.
Huh.
For kids that are struggling.
Well, if you're struggling, it doesn't sound like a bad thing.
You know what? It's not a bad thing. But it's not the whole picture.
Are you suggesting that we never compensate?
No, not at all. I think that definitely parents and teachers need to make accommodations for students to help them be as successful as possible. And parents should take advantage of 504 plans if their child isn't getting help through special education. But that's only part of the process. They need the accommodations while remediation is going on, because we don't want our kids to have to live with those disabilities and compensate their whole life. It's kind of like, if you're riding a bike with a flat tire, do you want strategies for riding better with a flat tire? or
I don't
think
so.
Want to fix the tire so you can ride like everybody else.
Right.
Or if you have a broken leg, do you want to learn better crutch techniques, or do you want your leg to get fixed so that you don't have to use crutches?
Huh. You know, is it really possible that these skills can be, you know, if I'm learning disabled, if I'm dyslexic, you know, is it possible I might not ever need any accommodations?
It is absolutely possible. But that leads us to myth number three. People, most people believe, I mean, it is really commonly believed that people who have learning problems, dyslexia or other kinds of learning disabilities, will always suffer from the effects, that these are permanent conditions.
And they're not?
They aren't. That is actually really old thinking. I mean, we have research now that's, you know, been going on for the last 15 to 20 years that tells us that the brain really can change. So science has proven a new reality for us. The brain can change, and therefore these conditions don't have to be permanent, because the areas that are not supporting us well enough can be retrained.
Okay, well, what does it take, you know, to make those permanent kinds of changes?
Well, here's what it takes. First of all, you have to figure out, usually through an assessment, you have to figure out where is the breakdown happening. And we can't just look and say, okay, well, he's struggling with reading, so I know there's a breakdown in reading. Yes, there is, but why is there a breakdown in reading? This is a smart child with supportive parents, with a good teacher. Why isn't he learning to read? Well, there must be something in the underlying learning skills or processing skills that is not completely developed or not working efficiently enough, and that's what we have to figure out. So first we have to pinpoint where the problem is.
And you can't do that just from looking at a discrepancy, huh?
No.
Okay.
You can't.
Well, you must have tests that pinpoint these things.
We do.
Okay.
And sometimes the problems may even be pinpointed in the school testing. But that myth number three gets in, both myths, number two and three, get in the way. Because it's believed that, well, they've got an auditory processing problem. Now we're going to have to make accommodations and help them get around it. And so, sometimes people even do know what the issue is, but they don't realize that something can be done.
So if the first thing we do is pinpoint, what's the second thing?
Then what we need to do is to really go after those specific issues, and we do that through intensive one-on-one brain training programs or strategies. They really need to be one-on-one, because every learner is different. So if my child has a learning problem and someone else's child has a learning problem, it's going to look different. So we need to work one-on-one with the student, work intensively on very specific activities that are retraining the way the brain is processing information.
Okay. And are there special programs to do that, or do you just, you know, kind of slow it down and, help kids?
Slowing it down is actually... that's more like an accommodation.
Oh, okay.
But there absolutely are. You know, we're really living in a great age now that we understand so much more about how the brain learns. And so there are a lot of programs, not a huge number, but there are a number of programs that very specifically target these different learning issues. You're not typically going to find them in schools yet. It takes a very long time for the schools to catch up with the research. You're not typically going to find it in tutoring, because tutoring, you know, is kind of like doing what the schools is. It's kind of giving more of the same. you have a reading problem, we do more reading. So you really have to be looking for therapists who do very specialized one-on-one brain remediation or brain training.
Hey, earlier you used the word intensive. What do you mean by that?
Well, two things, really. When we're working with students, we're really working very specifically on those issues, and so when we're working in their sessions, you know, there's not a lot of downtime. We're really going after it and doing lots and lots of trials. It's kind of like going to the gym. If you really want to train your muscles as an athlete, first of all, you have to really work at it when you're at the gym. And secondly, you have to do it frequently. So, you know, once a week, once a month, it's not going to do it. It really needs to be much more frequently than that. Usually, you know, anywhere from 2 to 5 times per week. But I would say our students are working an average, you know, of 3 to 5 times a week between us and parents, because we work very closely with parents.
Wow. So how long does it take to make these changes if we're going to work that intensively?
Well, it depends on the number and severity of issues. It's definitely not a magic pill, but it's not a forever process either. So we typically see changes, real, honest-to-goodness changes, within a few weeks. But we generally see quite dramatic changes within 12 to 20 weeks. So a lot of the cognitive training or brain training programs that we do range from 12 to 20 weeks. So that is certainly not a lifetime, but it, you know, it is a fairly intensive program for a number of weeks.
And I just want to go back and recap what we've talked about. The myth number one, if you aren't diagnosed learning disabled, dyslexic, or EED, then you don't have a learning problem. And what the reality is what?
That there are, you know, there are about 30% of our kids in every classroom today that have struggled in school, and you know, only about 5% are actually diagnosed with a learning disability. So there's a lot of kids out there, millions of kids out there, that are working harder and working longer than they need to because they do have some underlying learning problems.
So if we've been tested, we just, you know, shouldn't think that's the end of it.
Right.
Absolutely. Myth number two, the best way to help people is, with learning problems, to help them deal with it, get around it, or tough it out. What's the reality there?
The reality is that if that is the approach you take, then they will never really reach their potential. And it will really get in the way of their future choices, because they'll always have some degree of dependency on other people or on these, you know, accommodation strategies. It's not comfortable, it's not efficient, and it's just not right for smart kids to go through life not doing as well as they have the ability to do.
And myth three, that learning problems like dyslexia and other learning disabilities are permanent. The reality there?
The reality is that through specialized intensive brain training, the brain absolutely can change and learn to process information differently. So even something like dyslexia is not a permanent condition.
Wow. That you've covered some three pretty important things, I think, that parents hopefully will take some comfort in and kind of be able to look at their situation and see more clearly what's really going on.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a couple of parent questions, people that have written in, the questions people ask. One of them, the first one here, we've done lots of tutoring. How is this different?
Well, tutoring typically deals with curriculum. So it's either going to help a child get their homework done, or maybe if they know that they have trouble in reading, then it's going to help them you know, they're going to do more reading. So it's kind of doing more of the same. And the problem with that is that it's not fixing the problem. The child might be able to do some things when the tutor is right there, but a lot of times it's not going to transfer into the classroom. And, you know, doing more of the same is pretty overwhelming and frustrating to someone who's already having trouble there. So if you want to permanently change the problem so that the child doesn't need tutoring all the way through school, you must address the underlying processing skills.
Great. Here's the second question. My daughter was just diagnosed with dyslexia. Can it be fixed? Ooh, we've kind of talked about that already, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. And here are the key issues with dyslexia. We'll try to make it a little more specific to dyslexia. Here are two real key issues. One is, and probably the biggest one, is a weakness in what's called phonemic awareness, which is the brain's ability to think about the sounds inside of words. So you can teach the child phonics with the best phonics teacher and the best phonics program until you're blue in the face. But if the brain doesn't know how to think about that information, they're just not going to get it. So that's the first issue. And then the second issue is that many dyslexic students, not all, but many, experience confusion with symbols. So it's kind of like they haven't got those symbols that look similar anchored in space. And so,
what do you mean symbols that look similar?
Well, like a D and a B or a P and a Q. Those really, they all have a stick and they all have kind of a circle. And so if they aren't sure about what direction they go, you know, they're going to have confusion every single time they come across one. So a lot of times dyslexic students have some symbol confusion with letters that look similar, like that, or even like an H and an N, an F and a T, if, you know, if you use the little curve on the T. So there's some difficulties with that usually. So what we have to do to help a dyslexic student overcome those things is we have to develop the brain's ability to think about the sounds inside of words, and we have to help the brain perceive and remember symbols correctly. And just doing more practice isn't going to change that, so we really have to get down to a processing skills level.
And again, that's special programs, right?
Right, special programs. Cognitive or brain retraining, but it's absolutely possible.
And you've done it a few times, haven't you?
We have. We have, and it's just such fun to hear about our dyslexic students when they, you know, when they contact us later and say, you know, I'm heading off to college or I just graduated from college, and no one can believe I ever had a reading problem. So it's absolutely possible if you have the right kind of help.
Terrific. All right. We're here just under 30 minutes. We're doing great. Next week, we'll be back. If you want to send us questions to answer, please feel free to do that. You can send them to questions@fixlearningskills.com. Our next call, 5:15 next Monday night. Hope to see you then. Thank you.
Thank you.